This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm so glad you decided to join me today. My promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide each week, you will transform your health and your life. Before I introduce my guest for today's show, I want to invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and download your free ebook, Overcoming Portion Distortion. It's packed with quick and easy ideas for making mealtime fun, healthy, and family-friendly. So get your free copy today at eatgreatlivewellradio.com. We've got another great show planned for you, so make sure you grab a pen, paper, and your favorite beverage, and let's get started. Today we're going to be talking with Amber Romaniak. For the first time you meet her, you're struck by her positive passion, energy, and commitment to healthy eating. Amber is a holistic nutritionist, speaker, and leading expert on healthy eating and overcoming self-sabotage with food. Through corporate workshops, media appearances, restaurant reviews, and her very own Amber-approved digital magazine and cookbook, she's committed to globally changing the way people eat and promoting healthy lifestyles that support energy, mood balance, and personal happiness. Amber has formal training and her own experience with food addiction to support others trying to make life transformations. I just know that you're going to find Amber's passion for improving life through healthy eating contagious. And I'm really excited to have today's conversation. Amber, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
I'm really excited. And, you know, we've had holistic nutritionists on our show in the past, and I know each one has a little bit different outlook and way of addressing healthy eating. So I'd love if you tell our listeners just a little bit more about your background and the approach you take as a holistic nutritionist.
Sure. So essentially, I have some different specializations. So on the physical side, I specialize in digestive issues, hormone imbalances that interfere with energy and weight loss, as well as food allergies and sensitivities. And then on the emotional side, I really focus on the emotional eaters, the food addicts, the binge eaters, because this is a personal experience that I went through. And after overcoming my own food addiction, it really inspired me to want to help other people, especially women, because there are so many people struggling with body image issues and the food addiction or emotional eating connection. And some people just get so caught up in it and so lost that they just feel like they're never going to be able to get out of it. So essentially, when I'm working with someone, we're not only balancing the physical, but we're really focusing first on the emotional imbalances and helping them to identify where it all started and why they want to self-sabotage with food, because that is what's really creating all the digestive issues, hormone imbalances, weight gain, things like that.
I love that approach because I think a lot of times people think that they can just shift what they're eating, that it's really about food. And yeah. I really believe that food is the smallest part of it. It's really your approach to it. It's all the emotions that you have wrapped up around food, around eating, around the choices that you make.
Yeah, that is definitely part of it for sure. And when you're looking with someone with the emotional connection to food, until the emotional aspect is dealt with and the habits are changed in the brain and the neuropathways are changed in the brain, it's so easy to continue that vicious cycle of overeating, binge eating, whatever that person is struggling with.
No, I think that's really true. And identifying what those things are and working with someone like yourself is actually really good because it helps people realize that they do have to make that change. And oftentimes, it doesn't take a long time to identify what those challenges are, but it's really getting to the core of it so you can identify what they are and make those shifts.
Yeah. At first, giving them kind of an explanation of why they're kind of been in the habits they've been in helps them to not feel crazy or like there's something really wrong with them. Because I know when I was first dealing with all of these food addiction things and out of control with my eating, I felt like there was something wrong with me, that like I had no willpower. Like, why can't I just stay away from this food? So learning and understanding and overcoming, and then I sharing with other people, you know, like, not only is there this void that you have and these emotional imbalances, there's physical imbalances. Maybe your serotonin, dopamine levels, your, you know, your happy, feel good neurotransmitters are off balance. And this is why you're seeking a high from food, or, you know, maybe physically you have adrenal fatigue or some sort of imbalance that's making your blood sugar spike and drop, and you're craving sugar like mad, and then you're eating it and it's just fueling the cycle. So starting to, you know, explain to people kind of all of these different things that contribute helps them to, like I said, first give them some relief of, wow, like, I'm not crazy. There's nothing wrong with me. It's just that I'm dealing with this and I am now committed to figuring out how to overcome it.
Well, I think that's great to be able to get people to see that and realize that it's not about a lack of willpower. There's really something else going on.
Exactly. And also, you know, with some of the specific foods that people are binging on or overeating, it's a lot of like sugar, salt, fast food, things with MSG. And if we look at things like sugar, salt, MSG, and gluten, I mean, it's now proven that sugar is more addictive than cocaine. So no wonder people can't stop eating it. No wonder people can't put it down. And they put it in everything, right? So also sharing those kinds of pieces of information with people helps them to become aware of, like, wow, I really am craving this all the time. And after I eat a little bit of it, I all of a sudden want to eat more, right? So the more awareness and tools you can give to the people as you're working along with them, the more able they are to become aware of their bodies and listen for those cravings and those triggers, and then make a different choice. And as well, sometimes I find it to be quite motivating to share things like, did you know sugar is more addictive than cocaine? Did you know that gluten for some people can, you know, it's got opioids, so it can trigger the same kind of high feeling that heroin can for some people. So it's like sometimes sharing that information really helps people to be like, wow, this is really affecting my body physically and emotionally. And now that I know this, I'm really going to be aware and trying to eliminate these things out of my eating, but also then add good quality foods back in that do not have those addictive qualities.
And I love all the pictures that you've got on your website and Facebook page. The recipes look really, really good, and the pictures just really help people see what healthy eating can look like.
Yes, exactly. And that's what it's all about, because through my journey, I really realized, like, I go from depriving myself to binging, and then I was like, I have to figure out a happy medium. But I knew that I was sensitive to things like gluten and dairy, and really addicted to sugar. So it took me dozens of tries, but I got the sugar addiction out and the gluten out and all those things. And I was like, I still want to be able to have a muffin or chocolate or something sweet or something that seems like more of a treat. It started to inspire me to try all these gluten-free alternatives, dairy-free alternatives, natural sweeteners, et cetera, and start experimenting with these different ingredients to make recipes. And through that, you know, was created my cookbook and all the recipes that I post on my blog and the recipes in my magazine. And I have other food bloggers that contribute, and they all customize and do gluten, dairy, refined sugar-free, soy and corn-free recipes. So, and they're all delicious. And people ask all the time, are you sure there's no sugar? Are you sure? Like, and I'm like, right? And that's how you know it tastes so good. And the best test is to feed it to your kids. And if they like it, you know it's good. And I've never had a child spit out anything that I've made. But, hey, you know, it should taste good and it should be appealing to the eye. Healthy eating should not be boring. Because that's another trigger, right? Mm-hmm. If you're bored with your food, you're more apt to shy away and go towards the things that you're, you know, choosing to stay away from.
Right. And if you're bored with food, you tend to eat more because your body's looking for that satisfaction that it's not getting. So it's
exactly.
really important to just really be enjoy your food, get great pleasure out of it. Can you tell us a little bit more about your journey? Because I know you've really been through some things yourself, and that might help people understand a little bit more about you and why you're so passionate about what you do.
Yeah, most definitely. So essentially, I was kind of always unconsciously an emotional eater growing up. I just honestly didn't realize it. I just thought it was the way that I was. Just had a sweet tooth and enjoyed lots of treats and things like that. But it was in my early 20s when I had kind of a relationship and decided, oh, I'm going to, like, lose this weight, like, lose 25 pounds, look perfect, and then it should all work out. And it didn't. But in losing the weight, I deprived myself. And then after the relationship truly ended, I just thought, well, what's the point? This is too hard to maintain. And then this switch flipped, and I just went the complete opposite and was just binging, partially because I had a void, right, a lack of self-love void that I didn't realize. But I was just eating. Like, I'd go through the Tim Hortons drive-thru and get a bunch of donuts, and then I'd go get cupcakes, and I'd bring home a bunch of food and just binge on the couch. And I actually just made a YouTube video showing how much food I would eat on a binge night, and it's a lot of food. And so for over about 4 months, I gained about 50 pounds.
Wow.
And obviously was just completely disappointed with myself, and that not only had I gained all this weight, but I now felt sick. My moods were down in the dumps. I just felt like I couldn't go out and be social. And that really, my only, you know, thing that made me happy was food. And believe me, I'm not the kind of person that's just going to hide away and let my life, you know, crumble. So it was just, didn't seem like me to be struggling with that. And so about a year into the struggle, I was just like, I've got to figure out a way to get out of this, because otherwise I'm seriously going to kill myself with food, and my actions. And so it was kind of the biggest trigger was when I was binging, and then I had finished binging and I threw the rest of the food in the garbage, because usually if I throw it out, I'm not going to go digging through the garbage because that's ridiculous. But then I found myself digging through the garbage later on to eat the food, and I was like, wow, what am I doing? This is not me. I'm so ashamed and embarrassed right now. I have no idea how to get out of this, but I sure know I don't want to spend the rest of my life digging through a garbage can to binge on food. So that was kind of my big aha trigger moment of, I need to figure out how to change this. So I started to kind of slowly say, like, okay, you have one cheat day where you can kind of eat whatever you want. Otherwise, I wanted to start cleaning up what I was eating, and I got back into some activity and just really was focusing on trying to stay away from the binging, trying to break up the vicious cycle. And the more I read about sugar and digestive issues and energy, what pulls your energy down, and gluten and all of these different topics, the more I was just fascinated and used myself as a guinea pig and was like, wow, like, the less sugar I eat, the less I'm craving, you know, the less bread I'm having, the less bloated I'm getting, and all these other things. And so the more I read and researched, the more I became aware of all the things I was doing to my body. And it was really probably about a year into that I had eliminated all of the addictive, like, foods, but I still was having some binging issues. And then I really discovered, wow, I have a food addiction. Like, I have a binge eating problem, and it's totally emotionally created. And I have this void, this lack of self-love that I'm trying to fill with food. And at that moment, I was like, wow, I've got some major emotional work to do. Because I would just notice when I get triggered, like if it was a stressful day or if I was bored or sad or something was going on, I'd want to eat. And the more I ate, the more the habit just came back. So doing the emotional work really helped me to become aware of my body, and that instead of eating, I would just head on deal with those emotions. Because in this society, I feel like we're given so many distractions and stimulants and external things to distract us to not feel our emotions, and that it's safe to feel our emotions, and nothing bad is going to happen by feeling sad or angry, that our body creates these things for a reason. And if we can just sit with them and be present and accept them, nothing will happen. But we get really afraid of feeling certain things. And so some people eat, some people drink, some people shop, whatever their thing is. But then you usually feel worse after, and it continues the vicious cycle. So after overcoming that and, you know, really balancing my emotions and becoming really aware of why I was eating and filling the void with self-love and nurturing and eating well and taking good care of my body, I was like, how many other women are struggling with this? How many men are struggling with this? And not only do I have this personal experience, which I can completely get into the mindset of a food addict and what they're doing, I want to, you know, get the education and start, you know, start my business and start helping people. So then I went to the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition and got my holistic nutrition and took other courses and things like that. But bringing them together has really helped because, like I said, there's the emotional side, which is so important to start working on. But then it's also important to start balancing the physical stuff because a lot of those physical things are triggers and fuel the emotional eating. So I have the ability to give my clients both of those and support them however else they need with, you know, other people's help to help them get to optimal health and give them freedom from what I call the food jail where they're stuck and they just don't know how to get out of it. And seeing them go from, I don't know how I'm ever going to get out of this, to I now can see the light at the end of the tunnel, to I don't want to do this anymore. And now they're losing weight, their body's balancing. It's just one of the most fulfilling things I could have ever asked for in my life, to see people change their lives like that. And yeah, it's amazing.
We need to take a real quick break, and when we come back, I want to continue the conversation and talk a little bit more about the term you used, food jail, because I think that's something that might help people get free from emotional eating and really help them start looking at what they're doing. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Amber Romanek, and we're talking about the emotions of eating. And before break, you were talking about and referenced what you call food jail, and I love the fact that you work both on the emotional side and the physical balance and that combination. So how can people become aware of having these food issues, or how do they identify that maybe they need help, that they're in this kind of food jail, they've got this going on?
Yeah, so I find some of the biggest signs are things like they have no control around food. So yeah, they have control around their fruits and vegetables, but when it comes to any sort of treats, fast foods, you know, cakes, cookies, candy, things like that, whatever their vice is, they can't just have a little bit. It's like they have to eat the whole thing. And there's two reasons for that. One is because they promise themselves this is going to be the last time they binge, and so they're eating it all for the last time so that it's out of the house and they don't feel tempted. And two is because that's part of the self-hate. So binge eating and an emotional the kind of psycho-spiritual connection to binge eating is self-hate. And so it's just like you're stuffing yourself, you're so angry. So that's kind of one of the first things. Another thing is usually people are quite obsessed with weighing themselves when they're in an eating disorder like this. So they're getting on the scale every day, and they're freaking out because after a binge night, most people will hop on the scale and it will go up at least a few pounds. It's actually not that you've gained weight, but it's inflammation and water weight, but you don't know that usually at the time. So you're like, oh my gosh, I'm gaining weight. But then you get into this I don't care mindset because an addict or someone who's really emotionally connected to their food, because it's self-hate, they don't care. They want the quick fix. They want the high. So they're probably gaining weight quite quickly. They probably don't feel well. They probably do have some sort of digestive issues, bloating, pain, things like that. Obviously, their clothes are probably starting to fit tighter. And you just feel so overwhelmed. You have no idea how to get out of it. That's the problem is not only do you have no control around these foods are accessible to you pretty much anywhere at any time of the day. And I find most people to be their weakest in the evening. So they're finished work, they're coming home, so they either stop somewhere on the way home or they've got stuff at home, they've already planned their binge and they're looking forward to going home and eating because when you seek a high from something, nothing else matters. You just are so focused and obsessed with going home and, you know, eating that food because you get that 5-minute serotonin dopamine release, just 5 minutes. But our brain only remembers that 5-minute pleasure. It does not as well remember how bloated and in pain you are and how guilty and angry you feel afterwards. So that's the other thing is people don't realize, like I said, those neural pathways in the brain, those habits we create need to be shifted. So these are some of the, you know, things that I can definitely tell people that are stuck in the food jail and they don't want to be social because they're ashamed because they've either gained weight or they don't want anyone to see what they're doing. So you'll isolate and you'll do it at home and the privacy of your own home so no one else can see. Because when you're stuck in the middle of it, it is very embarrassing and ashamed. You know, you're very ashamed because you don't want to do it, but you don't know how to stop. So when people are that deep in, it's really the first thing is accepting that I'm struggling with this, but there's nothing wrong with it. That I am a human being and I am struggling with something and I really need to encourage myself to have some courage to get some help and tell somebody. So that's, you know, some of the biggest signs that I definitely say people have or they're one day they're like, okay, I'm going to be really good today because yesterday I binged, so I'm going to restrict myself and only eat vegetables and whatever is on their list of restrictive foods. And then that only works for a day or two, and then they're going back the other way and getting into the eating. So it's that those extremes as well that is a sign that someone is really.
But I think sometimes, because you said a couple of things that really struck out to me, because people say, don't lose control when it comes to fruits and vegetables or to healthier foods. And so they think they don't have an issue with eating. They don't realize that having an issue with one particular food type can mean that you've got some emotional issues going on around food and you really need to look at what you're doing. I think also when people binge and then, like you say, the next day they say they're going to be really good and they're going to focus on healthy eating and they're going to just eat fruits and vegetables and go to what I would term, you know, what people think of as diet foods, then what they do is they don't look at those as foods that are really healthy and fueling their body and giving their body what it needs to be healthy. They look at them almost as punishment foods, if that makes sense.
Exactly. It totally and is so true. Yep.
They don't learn how to cook them in a way using herbs and spices and cook them in a way that they're really flavorful and they can really get real high, you know, satisfaction from those foods. They look at more as, you know, I have to eat it versus I want to eat it. And that totally shifts the way you approach eating.
Oh, completely. And the other thing I find too is the deeper you get into a food addiction, especially with lots of sugar and salt and processed foods, is your taste buds become so numb to those healthy foods that are so tasty. So I often find, too, the problem is because you've numbed your taste buds so much from all these refined sugars and things, you eat an apple or you eat a piece of fruit and you're like, I'm not getting the same satisfaction. I'm not getting you know, the same high. And so therefore, this does not appeal to me. Even in the beginning, you know, when you are trying to change the way you eat and cook those healthy foods. And that's when I always encourage people to have patience, because when you are shifting the way you're eating and your taste buds resensitize, those veggies with those herbs on them and, you know, that apple is going to taste like candy. So it's, you know, it's like another factor, because like you said, when you get into whole foods eating, which I like to call it, you feel so satisfied and all of your food tastes so good. And then you look back and think, I would never want to eat any other way. I'm so satisfied with my food.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's interesting because people don't realize that it can take 10 days to 2 weeks to shift your taste buds, but it is so, it's very possible that, well, it happens. They shift over time. So it is going to take you a little while from going from, you know, getting satisfaction from healthy foods and give yourself 10 days to 2 weeks, and all of a sudden those foods are going to taste really flavorful. I tried something yesterday. We got something new and it looked really healthy, and it is really healthy. But when I took my first bite, it tasted very salty to me. And I read the label, and it's very low in sodium. But I don't use added salt on my food. We don't use it in cooking. We don't use it. So any salt at all really just like sends my taste buds through the roof. But so you just need to be aware of that it takes a little bit of time, but it really is short time compared to what the results are.
Exactly. And, you know, what's fascinating is that coming from, you know, probably one of the biggest sugar addicts you could ever meet, being me in the past, is if you would have asked me a few years ago if I would never crave sugar ever again in my life and that eating it would be too sweet, I would have said, no, you're crazy. I love sugar. But now, even eating a banana or a date or a piece of tropical fruit, I'm like, wow, this is really sweet. I can't even eat a lot of that. It's like dessert. So it's fascinating how, like you said, you spend those 10 days to 2 weeks and you can tell your taste buds are changing. And then, you know, you go through this body transformation and all of a sudden you may have something once in a while and you're just like, wow, that is way too sweet. And then you're kind of like, wow, I completely just went from a sugar addict to now I'm thinking this is too sweet. And when you get that aha moment, you just feel another sense of freedom. You're just like, wow, I'm totally overcoming all of this. And it's a nice motivator when your taste buds change and you start feeling more confident around your food, and that certain foods turn you off. Because I'd say that's a really good sign along the way of recovery.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I like to have people do when they're trying to make that shift is if they want dessert, you know, I always tell people there are no foods that are off limits, but it's just how you eat them and the quantity you eat them in. So if somebody really wants dessert, I challenge them to take 3 to 5 small bites, but as they're taking each one, really savor the texture and the flavor and, you know, then have your next bite and do that 3 to 5 times with small bites and then stop. Take a break for 5, 10, 15 minutes. And if you want a little bit more, repeat that. But what I challenge them to do is when they take that next first bite, to really pay attention to how the food tastes and how sweet it is. And what they'll find is those first few bites that they had in the very beginning really gave them the highest level of satisfaction. And continuing on, they're just really eating it. They're not getting that high pleasure. And when they don't get that, I really challenge them to stop. Most people do, and it shifts the way that they look at sweets and sugars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a good tip. And really practicing mindful eating, like, so if you are going to have something, you sit down and you be present with it and you smell it and you just take little bites and take time to chew it and taste it. Because like you said, yeah, you get that pleasure for the first little bit and then you do feel satisfied and you can move on. So I think, yeah, the mindful practices that are incorporated with, you know, healthy eating and some indulgence is very important because, you know, it's not about, you know, like, as you said, there's all these foods you're not allowed to eat. It's that you can choose what you want, but if you do choose something that's not in your, you know, your normal, what I like to call the 80%, really take your time to enjoy it. Because if you're eating that chocolate bar on the run, you're going to finish it and look at the wrapper and think, I didn't even taste that. And then that's where it could fuel you into wanting more.
Absolutely. It's like when they, somebody sits and eats a whole bowl of something and they go to get another handful and it's like, wait a minute, it's empty. What happened to that?
Yeah.
It really
yeah.
is all about mindful eating. We need to take another real quick break. And when we come back, I want to have you share a little bit, because you talk a lot about living gluten, dairy, and refined sugar-free. So I want to have you share a little bit more about that and some of the foods that you suggest that people avoid. So stay tuned. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Amber Romanek, and we're having a great conversation. Before the break, we were talking about mindful eating. We were talking about just really awareness of what you're doing and the choices that you're making. So if you missed that, you want to go back and listen to that. There were some great tips and a lot of things to really think about. I'd love to ask you, Amber, because I know one thing you talk a lot about is living gluten, dairy, and refined sugar-free. So why are these foods that people should avoid? And are there some that foods that they should avoid more than others?
Yeah, that's a great question. So essentially, I am gluten, sugar, and dairy-free because when I was going through my food addiction and my recovery, I found I had become really sensitive to dairy. I'd get stuffy nose and lots of bloating. Gluten would do the same, and I was very addicted to bread-like things. And so I found through eliminating gluten, I didn't want to binge as much, and then I as well noticed my digestion improving. And, of course, the sugar I needed to eliminate because I was so addicted to it that until I could eliminate it, I just couldn't stop eating it. And then I also cut out soy and corn because they don't agree with me. And being that they're pretty much, it's all genetically modified, is something that I chose that I didn't want to be putting into my body. And being that dairy is the number one most common food allergen in the world, gluten is number two, and soy and corn are not far behind. I wanted to create a lot of allergen-free recipes because I knew that I wasn't the only one struggling with a wheat allergy or a dairy allergy. And most clients that I have and most people that I reach out to and that follow me have some sort of allergy, whether it's one of the ones that I do not use or all of the ones that I don't use, or if they're an emotional eater, they're kind of on the same track where they want to make something tasty, but they want to avoid the foods that could be a trigger for them. Largely the gluten, I find, and the sugar. So that's some of the inspiration as to why I've eliminated that. And I find, as well, because sugar is in everything, and it can really interfere as well physically with our hormones, with our energy levels, with our blood sugar. So I wanted to, like I said, provide people with recipes and then, you know, take them to the grocery store and show them how to read labels and foods that do not have all this added sugar, even things like salad dressings, pasta sauces, you know, have some sugar and breads and things that you just think wouldn't have it. So that's, you know, on the end of sugar. And with things like gluten, being that it's, you know, an inflammatory protein found in things like wheat, barley, rye, spelt, and kamut, I think because of the way it's been altered, and that here in North America, if it's got 400 times more gluten concentration than it did 50 years ago, that's kind of scary to me. And you see more and more people being diagnosed with celiac disease and having gluten allergy or sensitivity, or they eat it and they feel bloated, or they eat it and they can't get their rings off their fingers. To me, you know, all those signs of inflammation is a sign that that is not good for our immune system and for our body. So another reason why I, you know, don't use that in any of my recipes and really encourage people to try cutting it out, see how they feel, and if they don't feel any different, well, then maybe it's something that they can tolerate in moderation. And with dairy, again, because it's such a common food allergen, and a lot of the dairy here is still processed and got lots of antibiotics and hormones due to the cows being injected. When I'm doing certain protocols with my clients, it's something that can definitely hinder their recovery. So getting them on dairy-free alternatives like coconut yogurt that's unsweetened, almond milk, brown rice milk, coconut milk, that's what it's all about, just swapping, you know, regular ice cream for a dairy-free alternative that's naturally sweetened, swapping milk chocolate for a good dark chocolate. Maybe there's some sea salt or almonds or something in it. So it's about shifting so that you get better quality nutrition for your body and you don't get triggered to want to binge on it.
You make some great points. And I mean, I know I was surprised when you start to read labels, just the amount of sugar in something like simple, like ketchup, a lot of condiments, a lot of dressings have sugar, they have high sodium. And when you take sugar out, you're going to be putting in, you know, more sodium because they're going to get the flavor from somewhere. So it's really important for people to remember that it's they need to read the labels, and if they don't understand what's in the labels, then they need to get some support. And mm-hmm. just because something is sugar or gluten-free also doesn't mean that it's calorie-free. So again,
exactly.
People think that, oh, it's healthy, and I think that's one of the challenges. People said, well, wait a minute, we're low-fat, we're low-sugar, we're gluten-free, but yet people are still having challenges with not losing weight because they think, oh, well, it's a healthy version. I don't have to eat just one or two. I can eat six, and it doesn't mean that you can eat a lot more of it. It just means that it's got better quality ingredients, but that doesn't mean that you still don't have to watch portion size. And I think people tend to forget that.
I know. That's a really good point. So I always tell people that too, just because it says gluten-free or dairy-free or whatever it is, or that it's a healthy treat, does not mean you eat the whole bag. We still have to practice mindful eating in moderation, right? And, you know, your body doesn't want you to eat 10 cookies or 10 muffins or whatever it is. And one of the biggest things I tell people, because I'm very against artificial sweeteners with aspartame and sucralose and things like that, is that if you see it saying sugar-free, low calorie, no calorie, zero, stay away because it's probably got an artificial sweetener. I check the label, and you'll largely see aspartame, sucralose, equal, saccharin, things like that. But stay away because, you know, these companies are so brilliant with their marketing and the way that they put things on their packaging to just make you buy in. And unless you have the education, excuse me, and the extra support, you're probably one of the people that's buying some of those products because it looks convincing on the package and that's what they want. So it really is becoming educated to use your dollars as your vote in the companies that you want to support.
Absolutely. And the front of the package is for marketing claims. So when it says, you know, it's healthy, it's, you know, whatever it is, whatever their claims are, those are marketing claims. Those are to sell the product.
Exactly.
You really need to turn it over and look at the label and then also look at the ingredients. And the more ingredients that are in something, you know, the the more you should probably stay away from it. And if you have a lot of things that you can't pronounce or you don't know what they are, even somebody exactly. who's not educated in the nutrition world, if you don't understand what the ingredients are, they're probably something that you shouldn't be eating or you need to eat in very small amounts.
Exactly. I completely agree. And I tell people that all the time. I say a 5-ingredient rule, unless it's a salad with lots of veggies or something in it. And check for an expiration date, because if that expiration date is in 6 months or a year, think of how long that's going to sit in your body as well, right? So, yeah, it is very important that we play detective with these food packages and look and see what the ingredients are, what the sugar and salt content and all of those things are, and your expiration dates, because they, like you said, their marketing pushes to sell, and frankly, they don't care if you get sick from eating their products. They want you to become addicted to them, so you keep buying them.
You know, and I mean, I know that about expiration dates, but I haven't really thought about it in that context, that the longer the expiration date is away from now, probably the more additives, preservatives, things they have in it to keep fresh. Because when you go to the store and you look at the expiration date on a salad kit, it's usually within a few days or a week at the most. Yeah. When you go look at a box of something, it could be 2 years out. So
exactly.
in order to keep that food fresh, they've got to put something in it so that it's, you know, it does stay fresh over that amount of time. So think about what that
exactly.
does to your body.
Exactly. I have a good friend here who has a homemade soup company here, and it's all gluten-free. And like she says, if it's in the freezer, it's good for 6 months. That's different. But she's like, if you have it out in the fridge, 4 days maximum. And that's how you know there's nothing added in it, because it shouldn't last for more than a week.
Yeah, that's a great rule of thumb. You know, and I think there are foods like, you know, when you think about foods that last a long time, there are foods like potato chips, and those are, not only do they have a lot of preservatives in them, but they also are really a triple threat for addiction, because they have salt,
yeah.
fat, and sugar in them. So it's really about, going back to the word you used, it's about shifting your choices, and it's about looking for good quality ingredients when you're shopping, and become familiar with what some of those things are. And you know, the other thing I tell people too, a lot of times people will say, you know, think about how your body feels a couple of days after you eat a food, and then, you know, is it good or not good? But I really challenge people, and I'd love to know what you think, I really challenge people to look at how you feel 20, 30 minutes, an hour after you eat, because I believe that most times you can tell pretty quickly how your body is reacting to the food that you just ate.
Oh, I completely agree, yeah. And for a lot of people, and I know myself because I'm very intuitive and sensitive now, I can literally feel it when I'm chewing the food. So it's something cool that you'll build as you become more in tune with your body. But literally most people, I'd say, start to feel some sort of, whether it's a sugar rush or bloating or pain, or maybe it's an emotion they start to feel, like an anger or a frustration or something. But it's usually quite quick. And then that full feeling kicks in, because you probably have been, you know, eating a lot of food. So I definitely say that those symptoms start to come, and cravings can get bigger, because you've just, you know, it's like igniting a fire. You're fueling that fire of a craving. So that as well. And then I also will see physical and emotional delayed reactions as well. So some people will eat a food and it may take them 4 or 5 days to react to it. And that's due to delayed reaction. And so maybe their skin's breaking out, or they're getting joint pain or bloating or constipation, or they're getting a craving a few days later. So that's definitely also something that I see. But it is usually quite instant when people are eating a food. It usually doesn't take very long.
And that all goes to really starting to pay attention to your body. I think it's also important to pay attention to your energy level, pay attention to your alertness, your focus,
yes.
because those are things that really have a pretty immediate need to the foods that you've eaten and how you're fueling your body, or whether you need to eat something more healthy. You know, do you get sleepy?
Exactly.
Do you get sluggish? Those are things that really happen fairly quickly.
Yes, exactly. And Another big one I find that you'll feel really quickly is, now do I have the urge to want to eat the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. The whole bag of chips, the whole carton of ice cream, the whole chocolate bar, whatever it is. I find that often that person will make their mind up quite quickly moving forward and having more. Awareness is a huge practice to bring in that I always bring in with my clients that I'm working with, because once they're more aware, they have the power to make different choices.
Absolutely. And we need to take our final break. But before we do that, I just want to just get everyone to think about, and then we'll talk about it more after break. It's that physical versus emotional hunger. Because when you're physically hungry, almost any food will do. When you're emotionally hungry, you really want to go to a specific type of food, like a sugar or something with salt. And you're looking, you know, you're very particular on what you want to eat. And I want to talk about more that a little bit more after the break. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Amber Romanek. And before the break, we were talking about foods that you should be aware of and how they impact your body. And those were gluten, dairy, and refined sugar, and how to listen to your body and how they affect your body. And right before break, we were talking about emotional versus physical hunger. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that, Amber, and how you, when you're working with people, how you might coach them to really identify whether it's physical or emotional hunger.
Yeah, which is so important to learn how to identify. So essentially, I find if, you know, you've waken up in the morning and you are hungry, that is usually physical hunger. If your stomach is grumbling a little bit and it's making some noise, and, you know, you've gone quite a long time without eating, or you're craving maybe something like an apple or a steak or a salad, I find when people are really getting into craving whole foods, it's usually a physical hunger. There's no stressor that's influencing your choice. It's that you physically need to eat. So usually you get that hunger signal, and that's caused by our ghrelin, which is one of our hunger hormones, making us feel hungry. And then if we look at emotional hunger, hey, we could have just eaten supper and you're like, I'm not satisfied, I need something else because I have a trigger, whether it's the stress, you had a bad day, you didn't get enough sleep, maybe you ate poorly the day before, so your cravings are carrying on to the next day. You are sad about something, you're bored, you're watching TV. I find a lot of people will eat and watch TV, and that's a really bad combination. So maybe that's the habit that you have in the evening. And so these are all emotional triggers or emotional connections to eating. Or it's that you have a little bit, like I was saying earlier, you eat a little bit of that indulgent food and then you keep going. So that's definitely the difference. And with physical hunger, you'll eat your meal, you'll feel full, and you'll stop, or you'll finish it and you're good, whatever the portion is for you that works. And you're done. You finish your eating, you are done with that experience. There's no emotional connection to it, and you move on to the next task of your day, whatever that is. With emotional hunger, you're so connected to that experience that you don't want to stop, and then that's where we usually see people get into binge eating and overeating lots of different foods because they're so wanting to be stuck in that experience to distract themselves that they don't want it to end, but obviously at some point we get so physically full that we make ourselves sick and we can't eat any more physically because we will explode pretty much. So I feel like essentially, yeah, when it comes to the emotional hunger, you're just completely out of control with it. And when you're eating for physical hunger, you're in control.
Absolutely. And I also encourage people when they've identified that they're not physically hungry, they've just eaten and they're still grabbing for more, to really stop and look at what are you trying to avoid? Because oftentimes, and sometimes it's emotions that we're going through where something's happened and, you know, we're upset or we're frustrated or we're mad or sad. But sometimes it happens, too, when we're trying to avoid doing something, when we're procrastinating, when we know we need to make a call, when we know we need to have a conversation with someone that might not be pleasant. We tend to reach for food because it's a distraction. It will keep us busy instead of actually doing what we need to do. And I think sometimes we get those things worked up so much in our head that we spend so much time avoiding doing something that we could have just had it done and moved on, and it wasn't nearly as big as we made it. But yet we tend to use those food as an excuse or as a substitute for actually doing what we really need to do.
Oh, completely. Food can be a huge distraction and avoidance mechanism. And I often find there's a lot of resistance around wanting to do the things to better ourselves. And we feel some sort of pleasure out of, again, going into that sabotage. It's almost like, well, I proved you right. I told you kind of right. I told you so kind of thing. So, yeah, I feel like it really is, it can be such a huge distraction, or like, oh yeah, I need to do all this work, but I don't feel like it. So there's a trigger, you're overwhelmed. So what do you want to do? You want to eat to suppress that feeling. You know, maybe there's a conversation you don't want to have and you're afraid, trigger, fear is a trigger, and now you just want to eat.
Absolutely. So what advice would you give to someone who's struggling with emotional eating, and where should they start?
So, as I kind of explained earlier, the first step is to be aware and just accept that you are struggling. There's nothing wrong with accepting that, because denial is definitely not going to help get you anywhere. It's okay to accept that I'm struggling with this. Now I'm aware I'm struggling with this and I accept that. So what do I need to do next to take the next step? So probably it is maybe to tell someone you're really close with, a family member or a friend that you know you can trust who's going to be there for you. And then maybe you start looking and seeking out help from, you know, a healthcare provider or someone like myself or yourself, to start, you know, reaching out and send them an email, say, hey, I'm struggling with these problems and I see that this is something that you deal with. Can you tell me how you may be able to help me? Maybe you go on YouTube and watch some emotional eating videos, or you join some sort of food addiction forum or something where there's other people going through some of the same struggles, and you have an instant support team because people can understand what you're going through. And then you really do want to, you know, go in and seek help from some sort of professional who can help you to identify where everything started, why it's happening, and all your physical and emotional stuff, so you can start to unravel it and deal with it and recover and have that freedom for your life.
No, I absolutely agree. And I would also add that I believe that most people have an awareness that something is going on, and they may be in denial that they don't need help or they don't need to take any action, that it's not that severe. But I would really challenge people to think about it. Even if they're not taking action, they're making that choice not to take action. So people often think of taking action and making that choice to do something is moving them forward. But choosing not to do something, you need to admit that to yourself, that that's still a choice. No action is still a choice. So you can put it, you can say you're going to put it off till later, but that's still making a choice not to do something. And I think we need to get better, all of us do, about owning that. You can put it off till later, and that is your choice, but you're still taking an action.
Exactly. I completely agree with you.
And I think that's something that will help a lot of people. I know it's really helped me a lot because I realize that I'm still doing something and I need to own that. And then I need to own what happens and the consequences of that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because if you kind of now know you're struggling with something and you're like, oh, well, you know what? There's still a week left in the month. So I'm just going to put it off till the first of the next month or whatever it is. We find we keep putting it off. We keep feeling worse. We're stuck in this cycle. We're spending more money because we're buying all this food or whatever the habit is. And it grows the amount of time that it's going to take you to recover because you keep putting it off, putting it off. And then you look back a year and you're like, wow, I wonder where I'd be if I would have started this a year ago. And there's nothing wrong because there's no perfect time to start. It's when you're ready. Mm-hmm. But when we keep giving excuses, it's like, why do you want to keep harming yourself instead of helping yourself? Why are you afraid of loving yourself? So many of my clients, when I ask them that, they just fall into tears and don't even know to say they're so afraid to see this experience, this beautiful life that they could have, a freedom from food. And I think somewhere in society, we did a flip, and instead of, you know, it's normal to be healthy, it's normal to take care of yourself and love yourself, it's kind of the opposite. And it's like, it's normal to be hard on yourself, it's normal to fly by the seat of your pants and eat whatever is going through the drive-through. And it's like, why are, you know, when you go out with people and they're in different eating habits than you, and they're like, what's wrong with you? How come you aren't drinking? What's wrong with you? How come you aren't eating this ice cream or this sundae? You know, and it's like, what's wrong with me? I'm trying to take good care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think also who you're surrounding yourself with plays a huge factor in your recovery. Because if you're hanging out with people that are in the same habits as you and you're trying to change, it can be a huge trigger. And it can make it more difficult if you don't speak up to your crowd and say, hey, you know, I'm trying to change my habits, so can you please support me?
Absolutely. And I love that question, why are you afraid to love yourself? This has been a great conversation, and I thank you so much for all of your time and all of your wisdom. How can people get in touch with you or learn more about you and what you have to offer?
Yeah, so they can find me at my website at www.amberapproved.ca. They can also find me on Twitter at amberapproved, Facebook at amberapproved. They can find me at those places. And that's where I'll have a bunch of information and videos and different things for them if they need any help and support.
Perfect. And I know you got some great recipes and great ideas for healthy eating there, too. And we will put a link to your website on our eatgreatlivewellradio.com webpage with today's interview, so people will be able to get you from there also.
Awesome.
I love to ask our guests, as we wrap up our time together, if you could give our listeners just one action item that they can implement in the next week to start creating a healthy future for themselves and the ones they love, what would you recommend they do?
I really recommend that they ask themselves, what kind of health do I want for my body? So do I have any sort of physical symptoms? Start listening to your body. If you're getting a stomach ache, a headache, low energy, you have a craving, start listening and see if there's certain foods that you're eating that are contributing to making that symptom show up or become worse. Because if we're not listening, we're not going to do anything about changing.
I love that question. So thank you very much for everything you shared today. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me.
So until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. Healthy choices you make every day add up over time to create a healthy future for yourself and your family. Be sure to join me each week as we continue the conversation on how to build a healthier relationship with food and with yourself. And again, I invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and be part of the conversation. Click on social media, and we'd love to have you share and answer Amber's question, what kind of health do I want for my body? Share that. We'll be able to bring you more great information. We'll be able to answer your questions. Take care and have a great and healthy week. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. Have a great week.